Episode 22. Do you find yourself in the same argument and squabble, day after day and night after night? Well, there's hope. We're finding out how to create an action plan for those reoccurring behaviors in this episode. Come on along. Chaos happens. Here we choose to lead chaos rather than be led by chaos. We are sharing tips, resources, networks, and interviews that help you validate your ability to lead chaos successfully and remain steady on. Are you ready to lead chaos? Let's do it. This is the Leading Chaos Podcast, and I am your host, Rhea Wincoller. Welcome to the show. I'm on page 25 of my book, Leading Chaos, An Essential Guide to Conflict Management. This is part of an ongoing series called The Leading Chaos Story. And in this week, we're talking about action plans, how to manage reoccurring behaviors that go on and on. A lot of our day-to-day conflicts are due to repetitive behavior. And I have seen this throughout my entire career when I go on to a site that is having to manage a lot of potentially volatile situations. And again, this is in my work as an instructor of the response curriculum, which is a crisis intervention training program. Now, in those cases, I might see or talk to folks, workers who are saying, you know, we have this guy and he is always interrupting every single group meeting. And we're really, really frustrated. We tried all these different things, and other members of the group are not able to get anything done because of that, because we're always managing his behavior. And what happens is they stay at this very flashpoint moment where they're always managing the actual behavior versus the underlying behavior that's actually pushing that. Outrageous behavior of acting out. So I call the really obvious behavior, the acting out behavior, level one. But what you want to do is get down to level two of that recurring repetitive behavior. That's where you're going to really find movement and where you can then create that action plan and work towards resolution. Let's try a couple examples of level one and level two repetitive behaviors so we could work towards that path and creating resolution. Here is a level one, and remember that level one is the most outrageous behavior. Being disruptive is a level one repetitive behavior, and it could happen in so many different settings. We might see this behavior during a dinner. It could be a family dinner, at a work site, a work party, or in a clinical setting like a group home. The person is being disruptive and everybody focuses on that and they try to manage it. And what typically happens, you get through the dinner, you get through the meeting, but you all kind of have a little upset stomach or a headache afterwards. And especially if this person is continually disruptive. Remember, this is about a reoccurring behavior. It's one thing if somebody does it once in a blue moon, but if they're always doing it, that's when a little light bulb goes off and you say, voila, something is going on here. We want to look at level two. Now, level two is kind of important because what is going on there is that there's something driving that disruptive behavior. And you have to think about a whole bunch of potential possibilities. That's a lot of peas, but you could do it. So one potential possibility, I'm going to keep trying to say that because it's so fun doing that on a podcast, a potential possibility podcast, is what you want to look at. What is driving that behavior? And it could be as simple as the person has difficulty sitting still. That makes anyone have difficulty. And it could be for a simple reason that they are anxious, they have anxiety, and they, you know, feel surrounded by people. It could be that they are ADHD, which is attention deficit disorder. There could be so many things there. Another possible level two, and remember, you have to look for a number of them, is that that person may be very used to getting attention via negative attention. So if you have a student who has difficulty sitting still and wants and keeps on getting themselves into difficulties, it might be because the only way you get love and affection at home is by gaining negative attention for yourself. And that could be true in any family situation. Another reason, another possible level two, remember there's many of them, and that's what we're looking for, is that the family has no respect for boundaries. Especially when you look at a situation where somebody is in a group home and they're having dinner and they're having difficulty sitting down. I mean, think about most home situations. A lot of folks, they don't sit at dinner. They're standing, talking, eating pizza as they go, running out the door, or they're sitting and always having dinner while watching TV. So there's so many things that drive this. The level one, again, is the most obvious, and the level two is the underlying piece that drives it. And you can look at a list of level one and level twos to get a better idea. It's on page 27 and 28 of Leading Chaos, An Essential Guide to Conflict Management. What we do with that information, once we find level one and level two, is we want to create an action plan. And it's best if we're creating the action plan in unison with the person we're trying to help or with ourselves. I'd like you to listen along to this next scenario, because in this case, you have a supervisor who is using the information of what can be driving this person's behavior and trying to help them succeed. Listen now.
Cheryl's worksite behavior. Cheryl was a fast, articulate talker. She was always known as an antagonist and was typically found in the middle of conflicts, either egging on to other parties or intimidating someone else. Mrs. Lewis had just been told that Cheryl was being transferred to her department at Community Insurance Incorporated. She was also told that Cheryl rambled on and on when she was angry and had difficulty listening to anyone until she had settled down. Once she had controlled her anger, however, she was a good listener and a very good worker. Mrs. Lewis was scheduled to meet with her to discuss her new job duties.
Oh no, Mrs. Lewis, let's hold on to our horses and just take a step back for a minute. We know that Cheryl is two-sided. One is that she's a really good worker, especially at this department. She's considered one of the best. At the same time, Cheryl has a level one repetitive behavior, and that is a little bit surrounding her anger management, where she could ramble on and have difficulty listening. Yikes. What can a person do in the situation? Well, it's really easy to get stuck and just focused on the negative behavior, that level one, that outrageous behavior, anger and rambling. But Mrs. Lewis, I have a feeling, is a little bit wiser than that. She's going to know that sometimes you can make lemonade out of a lemon. And in this case, she's going to do that with Cheryl. Let's see how.
Once they had gone through the basic introductory hellos, Mrs. Lewis began by saying, "Cheryl, we are meeting this morning to speak about your new duties here at CII. You are a skilled worker, and this position will be an exciting new challenge. What were you hoping to bring to this new team?" "I'm a good listener and love to work hard on new ideas," said Cheryl. "Could you say more about your attributes as a good listener?" inquired Mrs. Lewis. "I'm expecting you to be a leader, and I know that role can have its ups and downs."
Bravo, Mrs. Lewis. You just left the door open for Cheryl to begin discussing her strengths. You also directed the conversation towards communication skills and the dynamics of a team instead of confronting Cheryl. You could have said, "I know you have a hard time working with others. It's kind of like nanny, nanny, nanny." And that would definitely make Cheryl on guard. Instead, she put Cheryl in the driver's seat. And she did that in a very enticing way by leaving the door open. "Could you say more?" And that allowed Cheryl to reflect upon her work style and communication skills. So many of the tools we need to manage conflict and help others are already familiar or at the very least, similar to jobs we have had in the past. For me, helping to set up an action plan is much like helping a group of first-time campers have a successful backpacking trip. In part one of this series, I spoke of how I used to be an outdoor adventure instructor, and I would take kids on wilderness backpacking trips. I knew if they didn't have a good first trip and feel comfortable, like setting up the basics of a tent, they would never likely want to sleep in a tent again or consider a hike in the woods. So usually, a week or two before going out on an overnight trip, I would make sure all the food was packed and ready. I know that's pretty big, but you know, it's part of my work. I would make sure that we also were practicing setting up a tent at our home base at least once, maybe even twice, before we headed out. That way the tent would go up effortlessly when we arrived at the camp, tired and hungry and sometimes in the dark. My overall goal was to make sure that the campers went home happy with memories of their first night out in the woods. The same approach can be taken when helping to create an action plan. Maybe you've never led a group of kids out on an overnight, but consider every other activity that you have engaged in over the years, from packing for a vacation to getting the car ready for winter travel or your house or windows in your apartment ready for the winter winds. Life offers us lots of opportunities to prepare, set up, and instruct others or ourselves on how to use the proper tools and techniques to ensure a rewarding first adventure and definitely avoid an experience in misery. If you go to the leadingchaospodcast.com website, you'll see the following three techniques that are key in helping another person and yourself create a workable action plan. They involve, number one, active listening, as Mrs. Lewis did. Two, practice dropping the content. And three, pay attention to your intuition. I will say this one over and over again. Your intuition is such an amazing human quality that we have. Basically, if you get a hunch that a conflict is being fueled by repetitive behavior, take note. You could do something about it. Conflict happens. The important thing is to remember that you are able to have an impact on how conflict affects your life. Removing the melodrama associated with so many conflicts is a skill that requires observation and active listening. And dropping the content removes the drama and helps reveal harmful behaviors that become repetitive and contribute to recurring or even escalating conflict. There will always be conflicts. There will always be crises. Like I said, conflict happens, and your preparedness for handling everyday squabbles will come in handy during such those really extreme times. As many of you might know by now, I am pretty actively involved in Aikido, and I have been for nearly 30 years. And in Aikido, we have this little thing where we practice the same technique over and over. The mantra of Aikido is practice, practice, practice. And when I find myself going over the same technique, sometimes I speed it up or I slow it down, and I notice these little subtle changes that occur in my physical and my emotional balance. The depth of learning is never ending. It's an amazing martial art. It is indeed. But new students of Aikido, you know, they could get impatient, and I get this quite a bit because they don't see the value of the repetition. They feel like, well, you know, you come at me this way and I'm going to be able to counter you. But they don't get the full cycle, and it takes a while to get that wisdom. In time, though, they soon learn that many techniques are lovingly called a 30-year technique or a 20-year technique, meaning it takes about a minimum of 20 to 30 years to perfect a single movement. And truthfully, as someone who's been in this for quite a long time, it's still taking a while. In my private life, I've often found myself getting stuck in the same argument with the same person over the same topic. Just like that new Aikido student, I feel impatient and I want the conflict to go away so I can move on. If Aikido has a 30-year technique, then those personal conflicts that trouble me most are likely 60-year-old techniques. And that is sure a long time to get it right. But hey, My mom taught me a saying when I was 14 that has helped me keep such life lessons in perspective. She said, "Don't let your highs get too high or your lows get too low." I take that as there will always be obstacles that each of us have to face during our lives, and conflict will be a constant. In order to manage my own anger, I keep my mom's saying back in my mind and realize that seeking balance in life takes hard work, compassion, preparedness, and practice. I hope you enjoyed this episode on creating an action plan and learning how to continue to drop the content and working with those repetitive behaviors that make us go bonkers. If you like this, please subscribe and leave a rating via iTunes. Let us know on the podcast website at leadingchaospodcast.com and follow the podcast on our Twitter feed at Leading Chaos. This is Rhea Windcaller signing off for now. Be kind, be safe. Don't let your highs get too high or your lows get too low. Steady on. Ciao for now.